Beacon Press Audio presents Ace, What Asexuality Reveals About Desire, Society, and the Meaning of Sex by Angela Chen. This audiobook is narrated by Natalie Nottis, published by Beacon Press Audio 2020. For everyone who has wanted to want more. If you're not having sex, what's there to talk about? Star Jones, The View. Author's note. There is no one asexual or ace story, and no book can capture all of ace experience. This book is meant to be a big picture exploration of ace issues and what they can teach all of us about sexuality and desire in a very particular context. It is deliberately limited to the people that psychologists call weird, Western, educated, industrialized, rich, or at least middle class, and democratic. Most are also American and liberal, a word I use throughout this book to mean culturally liberal and typically sex positive. The book is deliberately contemporary. The stories are grounded in the present, drawing from my own life as well as extensive interviews with other aces. I offered anonymity to each person I spoke with, so in many cases I use a person's first name only or a different name entirely. The word we shows up frequently in this book, and its meaning changes too. Sometimes I use we to mean the community of aces, since I identify as ace, and sometimes I use it to mean the bigger we, which is the society of Western, liberal, primarily upper-middle-class America. I hope many more books will be written about the experiences of those outside this world. There is so much more to say. Part 1. Self. Prologue. I let Jane pick the restaurant, since I was in Silver Spring for the day anyway, and she had driven down from Baltimore to see me. Those who knew us both liked to joke that we were the same person, bookish, interested in neuroscience, and she had even cut her hair short after I did. But it was our differences that interested me now. "I have a question for you," I said, as soon as we settled into our booth at the Burmese place she had chosen. "What does sexual attraction feel like?" Jane shifted in her seat. We were both 24. She was a virgin who had never had a boyfriend, while I was in the middle of my second serious relationship. My boyfriends enjoyed sex, as did I, and I considered myself lucky to have such an uncomplicated sexual history. Yet there I was, asking my friend what sexual attraction felt like from the inside. I wanted a blueprint, something I might lay side by side with my own experience to see where they matched up and where they diverged. "I don't mean what it feels like when you think someone is good-looking," I continued. I knew how that felt. "Or what it feels like to want a relationship with someone, or to love them." I knew that feeling too, had known it so deeply that it had shamed me. I didn't have a problem becoming physically aroused during sex, and I was not naive enough to believe that physical desire was the only reason to have sex. People had sex to feel closer to their partners or better about themselves, to counteract boredom and to distract from their problems. What I didn't know was what it felt like to want sex without a specific person in mind, to think about sex at all when I was alone, to feel any physical urge for sex distinct from wanting the emotional intimacy it created. I had more sexual experience than Jane, but she was the one who spoke openly of lust and libido. Meanwhile, the language of sexual drive did not quite make sense to me. Jane took a bite of tea leaf salad, then tapped her fork against her plate. "I want to be close to someone, physically, even if they're just a stranger," she said. "I get jittery, I start fiddling with things, I feel warmer." She stumbled as she continued, then apologized because her answer was not particularly precise. "I don't know," she said. "It's just a feeling." But it was answer enough. Jane's cautious description revealed that what I had passed off as sexual attraction, even to myself, was something else entirely. Aesthetic appreciation, a desire for emotional and physical closeness, a certain possessiveness. All were related to sexual attraction, components that could build upon and amplify it, but they were not the same as sexual attraction itself. "Is this just an intellectual exercise?" Jane asked. "No." Chapter 1. Arriving at Asexuality. At 14, I came across the word asexuality the same way most people do, online. I read the words prominently displayed on asexuality.org, the website of the Asexual Visibility and Education Network, AVEN. An asexual person is a person who does not experience sexual attraction. Asexuality, I learned, is a sexual orientation, just like homosexuality and pansexuality and heterosexuality are sexual orientations. A person who is homosexual is sexually attracted to the same gender. A person who is asexual is sexually attracted to no one. All of this made sense. Growing up in Silicon Valley had helped me develop a healthy appreciation for alternative lifestyles, and I was pleased that my latest Wikipedia rabbit hole had taught me something new about the world and about other people. I had no trouble believing that asexuality was normal, healthy, and valid, and that these asexual people, or ACEs, were entitled to long and happy lives without the rest of us pointing and laughing. But learning the term did not change how I viewed myself. I misinterpreted a person who does not experience sexual attraction to mean a person who hates sex, and so I, personally, could not be asexual. I hadn't had sex yet, but the idea held great promise. That's the strange thing about this orientation and all the misconceptions it carries. It is possible to be ace and not realize it. To see the word and still shrug and move on. Definitions are not enough. One must plumb deeper. Since I assumed I wasn't asexual, asexuality seemed irrelevant to my life. In this, too, I was wrong. Sexuality is everywhere, and in every place that sexuality touches society, asexuality does too. The issues that ACEs struggle with are the same issues that people of every orientation are likely to confront at some point in their lives. Let's take, for example, the question of how much sexual desire a person is supposed to have. How much is too little? When is too little unhealthy? How might one's answers, or the answers that are assumed, change depending on gender or race identity or disability? What does the amount of desire we experience mean about our politics, our personalities, and our prospects for relationships? What should it mean? These are broad questions of human experience. The answers look different from the ACE perspective, and this book tries to match one with the other. To do so, I interviewed nearly 100 ACEs, both over the phone and in person. I asked questions about attraction and identity and love. The answers they provided were rarely simple, as my own experiences have not been simple, as no one's ever are. The ACE way of thinking has many new terms and nuances. Like anything that is honest, it can be messy. There's the man who grew up in a religious environment and followed all the rules, only to realize after marriage that sex was not the wonder he had been promised. The woman who ordered blood tests in high school because she was convinced that her lack of desire for sex was a symptom of serious illness. Disabled ACEs can have trouble fitting into either community, wondering where their disability ends and their asexuality begins, and whether finding that border should matter. ACEs of color and gender non-conforming ACEs question whether their asexuality is a reaction against stereotypes. Everyone wonders how to separate friendship and romance when sex is not part of the equation. ACEs who don't want romantic relationships wonder if there's room for them in a world hyper-focused on a particular type of partnership. And aces who do want romantic relationships point to...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?